today we're going to go through a couple of different things, and so we get recorded. So some people are still not here, but I kind of wanted to wait until at least Sean and Megan got here. And I think there's going to be a couple of other people. Today, you know, I know some of you better than others. So we're going to ask you at some point to introduce yourselves, and we're going to talk a little bit about the whole process. Judaism does not make it very easy to convert, and there's a reason for that. Basically, there's an issue of, and this is a class, and you can decide at the end whether you convert or not. That's a separate, this is a class to prepare for, and we're going through the process. Just because you graduate the class, you still have to go to the Beit Din, which we're going to set up and I'll go through the process, and go to the mikvah and for the men to have. If you're not circumcised, to have surgery, but if you're circumcised already, there's an issue of etzipat dam. And if Herb was here, if Moyle was here, what class will have him come in and talk to the men about what he does? Because we do have Moyle that comes, he comes to some of the classes. He's a Moyle. He's the one who's going to be doing the Moyle certification and next taking the drop of blood for those that need it. Well, everybody, all males need it. So I'll tell you something. Go through this process. I'll tell you a story. I was with Serena last week at the beach, and on Wednesday we were at Lackland, and we were watching TV before we went to the basketball game, and there was this television show on TV called Kosher Soul. It's one of those stupid reality kinds of things, and there's this rapper who's marrying a Jewish lady, and he's getting converted, and. The episode itself was talking about him, and the whole episode was the build-up of him getting the drop of blood taken from his penis. And so there was a whole hype of, oh yeah, it was all this stuff, and it was really a little thing, but after he had the went to the Moyle and had the drop of, and it was called Chabad Moyle, and it was the whole process that he was sort of faint and he's scratched. It's done for the reality show, right? So, but the next day, this is where you get the issues of the purpose, and we're talking about purpose of conversion. The next day, he went to a barbecue joint, and they had a whole, he decided to have a whole barbecue, this place made a barbecue pig, a whole little pig. And the barbecue pig says, I'm going to get out of my system. And he brought his wife with him, his soon-to-be Jewish wife, and she was mortified that they brought down this pig on the table and they ate this whole pig. So you ask yourself as a rabbi, what is the purpose of this conversion? Why is he converting? What? I mean, obviously it's for the television show, but the whole purpose is not to do, well, this is my last day as a non-Jew. I'm going to do everything non-Jewish possible. What about Israel? You're going to do the trefa dinner, the trefa banquet that they did. And we don't have the history in the form of it. The idea of having all the shrimp I can eat and all the pork I can eat, you know, and do everything that make. And then that day I'll have my Christmas tree, my Easter bunny, my last Eucharist, you name it. Do everything the last day. I'm going to get communion, everything I can to cover myself that I'm covered coming to Judaism. That's not what conversion is about. Okay, so the class is going to really teach you, prepare you to live a Jewish life and to understand what it means to come into Judaism. And that doesn't mean, you know, that you keep on to those things going forward. When you come into Judaism, you know, and I had a conversation with somebody that a majority of people who convert to Judaism have embraced Judaism much more than those that are born into it. Because it's something that you earn, you strive for, you want it to be something that becomes a part of your life. Being Jewish is not easy. There's a yoke associated with it. We talk about the yoke of mitzvot, but there's a yoke, there's a heaviness that pulls us down that makes it more difficult. So the process that we're going through is not going to be, at this point, most of you have shown some interest by coming to synagogue every week, and I see most of you are interested in learning more about Judaism, that have had that desire to be part of something for a long enough period of time that, you know what? You know what it means at this point. So at this point in the game, you've had enough tirchas. Understand the weight of what Judaism brings. A tircha is a negative thing. So now when we're moving forward, we are going to be in the process of learning what it is to understand the heritage. Some of you know some of this stuff, so some of it will be easy to understand now the practices. Now, the Beit Din will be composed of, for those of you who go all the way into the Beit Din, will be myself and two other Orthodox rabbis. But unlike some other Orthodox conversions, and it will have to be a Shidduch from Beth El, a certificate from Beth El, the expectations is you will do your best to buy the mitzvot. I am not going to go every Shabbos to see how you get the shul. I'm not going to go to your house and inspect your kitchen to make sure you're 100% kosher. In some communities, they do that, and they have the Orthodox conversion. You have to learn what to do and do the best you can in doing that. If you can't do that, then you have to question the sincerity of what it means to convert to Judaism.
Could you certify the kitchen, though, that we wanted you to?
If you wanted us to, yes, without a doubt we could do that. That's totally at your discretion, but not a requirement. Okay, because the idea is, it's a lifestyle that you're choosing to live. It's not a lifestyle that I'm imposing upon you. And you see, the free will can't be taken away from all of you. But if you have enough, if I'm able to impart the knowledge that I have, the love that I have for Judaism, and following the materials, that when the process really gets formal, you'll want to be a part of that. We want to be a part. So when we go to a Seder, it's not just we're talking about, oh, it's those Israelites. No, because we say at the Seder, it's as if we were liberated. Right? And you will feel that. So that's sort of the idea when we talk about, when we talk about expectations, it's not all on me. Some of it comes from you. Okay, so conversion is something that I personally take very seriously. I've only been on two Beit Din for that reason. Okay, because I think that it's something that the people have to want to find that connection to it. So, okay, so let me just go here. There are four main categories. I'm sorry that I'm not going to do this slide because I'm using my computer and because I made the judgment that I wasn't going to use that thing, so I put it over there. So I'm going to go back and use it over here, okay? Okay, so there are really a couple of categories of why people convert to Judaism. And again, we're going to get some of the reasons here. There's a spiritual reason, right? Judaism was seen to provide a religious worldview or a set of values or an ethic that was better than the religion or worldview that you previously held. Perhaps it's important because Jesus was a Jew. Okay, God in Judaism was providing some direction, some way to come to Judaism, that you felt an urge or a yearning from God to come into being a Jew. Jewish religious services were attractive. Judaism simply was coherent with common sense about what religion should be like. Judaism's practices were realistic, and I apologize that Yosef doesn't see me behind this little thing here. Judaism provided good role models for needed spiritual identity through biblical figures, as well as contemporaries such as a romantic partner or a friend, a doctor or an employer that was a good role model. There was a deep-seated sense of religious void, and Judaism filled that void. Or a specific personal event such as a death or a divorce or a breakup of a relationship that precipitated a religious crisis that resulted in a need to find some new self-definition. The other common, those are the spiritual ones. There's romantic reasons, right? It was desired by the children in a marriage to have a Jewish religious identity, okay? So they wanted to get married to be Jewish so that the children had that identity. There was a wish to be married in a Jewish ceremony. There was concern the children would be raised in a unified spiritual home. There was a desire to avoid inevitable fights over such questions as theology and religious observance, because that's always common in marriage discussions. There was a wish to please the Jewish in-laws. There was a Jewish romantic partner would be pleased. Conversion provided an opportunity to share the romantic partner's religion and thus bring the couple closer together. So there's the romantic reason. There's a communal reason, right? It's a Jewish community, as you know. There's a sense, and I apologize, Megan, that I'm behind this, but this, I took away this time. So and everything's over here. Jews were admired for their survival in the face of adversity as far as our communal existence, and actually we'll go through that history. Jews were seen as forming a warm community, and it's seen as desirous to join such a community. Judaism was seen as having a long distinguished history, and joining that tradition was seen as a worthy goal. Jews were thought to lead better lives than Gentiles. The convert had numerous Jewish friends. The convert had a desire to identify with the Jewish people and become part of the faith of the Jews. Jewish social life was seen as attractive. So there was and then there's personal reasons. There was a belief that becoming Jewish would lead to gains in such things as status. The idea of joining a new religion was seen as exciting. Judaism had always been the forbidden fruit, so that becoming Jewish was exciting. And becoming Jewish was a way of separation from birth parents. So these are some of the reasons why some people convert to Judaism. In fact, one of the books that, three books that I'm going to recommend. One of them is by Lawrence Epstein, which is called Conversion to Judaism, a Guidebook. So it's actually a guidebook, and we'll follow some of the curriculum there and add some stuff. And then my two standards that I think is to praise a Jew and to be a Jew are also good ones. They have their inexpensive ones as well. There are many Jewish books and resources, and throughout the class, I'll recommend some resources. So if you're taking notes, things like Jewish Virtual Library, Judaism 101, FAQ. There's a number of different sources up there, but to have the textbook itself is, I think, very relevant, because part of the process that we're going to go through is what it means to do this conversion process. The textbook gives us a guideline for what to follow for as far as the curriculum goes. At the end of the process, you have the option of writing a test. I say the option. If you're going to go to conversion, you have the option of writing a test. If you're just doing it for your edification, and you're doing a test later on, you don't have to do that test. But the big thing is going to be looking at this test as part of the knowledge base that you have. And it's going to be I'm going to show you a sample of the test. It's going to be something that looks like something like that, with essay questions, for the most part, having you basically able to answer those questions. Because part of the conversion process is really three steps. Okay? The first step is that notion of Jewish knowledge. Now, for children under certain ages, or we can go down to families, the knowledge is a little bit different. The attendants are doing some kind of Jewish knowledge online. We can talk about that with the parents, but that consists of, as well as being part of Hebrew school if it's available, or Hebrew something online, so they can get the knowledge at their level. The knowledge we're going to have is much bigger level. They're not going to have the same kind of test, though. We'll talk about specifics for kids as far as what they should know and just some basics, because I think there should be some knowledge. But children learn from their parents. So for the families that are in here that have kids that are also pretty part of the process, they're going to learn from your actions. So what you do will help them learn. You know, having discussions on things like the Torah discussion that some of you are already doing some of this stuff. So we can speak offline specifically with regards to how to get the children involved. There are many different online resources for children to help to learn more about the faith. And they don't children anybody under the age of 18. Again, anyone who's over 13 can make their own decisions in Judaism, but for the sake of the class, per se. The second thing that's required is immersion. That's required by males and females. And the conservative group here goes to Barton Springs. And I'll be honest, we're not going to go to Barton Springs. Okay? For two reasons. One, the law requires, or it has to be, Barton Springs doesn't fit the category, but you can't go into Barton Springs naked. According to Jewish law, there should be no separation between you and the water. So bathing suit is not acceptable. So what we will do is we'll arrange not to go together, so nobody gets scared, not to go together, okay? We're going to arrange for a time where we'll go to the mikvah in Dallas, okay? And there's actual mikvah where they have the lady of the mikvah and the women will go in, being observed by witnesses who are female, and they'll do the bracha when they're there. And the person will attest to it. The same thing goes with men. We'll do that with the rabbis. Men will do it with the rabbis observe it. And yes, it's an observation. Men do not observe the women. In fact, there was a court case in New York where there was a creepy guy who was observing him going to mikveh, and he's in jail now. Okay, so that's not allowed. Okay, we take on the witness for, in the case of the mikveh, it's important to do the immersion. You dunk yourself down, you say a bracha, it's in and out, boom. And when we're learning about Judaism, we'll learn about what a mikveh really entails, what it is. But it's basically a source of water that has a natural flow to it. There's natural water going into it. That's why Barton Springs is okay. Some conservative communities allow for a pool. The mikveh in Dallas, I'm assuming, is a standard mikveh, which is heated and has the water coming into it. I haven't been to it, but I'm assuming that's what it is. Most mikvehs are not just where you go into freezing cold water like Barton Springs. It's usually in a very nice area where there's a locker room of pre-things. You take the dirt out of your nails and everything, you go in. When we talk about the laws of family purity, the mikveh is a big part of the laws of family purity. So if you wanted to follow the laws, again, I say you want to, but Judaism says you should, but if you decide that that's the law, that one of the laws you want to do, you have to figure out ways to find a mikveh if you live out in Lampasas or something. You want to find a way to figure it out, because, again, if you follow the laws of family purity, after every menstrual cycle, you have to go to the mikveh. If you don't go to the mikveh, your husband can't touch you. So you have to make sure that if you decide to follow that, you have to be cognizant of it. If you decide to follow that.
What if you don't have one?
You've got to find one.
No, what if you don't have a menstrual cycle?
That's a whole different issue, but yes. Okay. That's a whole different issue. But yes. Women who are in menopause or in a different category, that's family purity laws are a little bit different. We're not talking about that. We're talking generally. We're just talking about the requirements. And men have to have a drop. Men who, there's two, for the men, they need either one or two other steps. And that is, the two steps are, if a man's already circumcised, okay, all he's going to have is a drop of blood taken from, and it's literally about a needle, and put a little blood on a piece of, sort of like a tissue, just to see the blood. Be part of the covenant. If they're not circumcised, that's a whole other story, where things have to be removed. And the whole foreskin has to be taken off and taken down to the point where, and that's the same thing. It's what happens to a child and a boy. Same idea of circumcision. Circumcision actually for a man is having them join the covenant. Women come into the covenant right away. Because women are always on a higher spiritual plane than men. Men only can be part of the covenant after 8 days. So that's why we have the bris for children on the 8th day. Again, we'll talk about that. Okay? And that would happen to be not just for the parent converting, but also for the, because you guys have a son, you get a drop of. It by the way, it doesn't hurt. It's literally, where they do it doesn't. Okay. Now, the member of the person has to be inspected by the moil to make sure that all of the proper foreskin piece was removed in the circumcision. 99% of that, it's not a problem. Usually the inspection and the taking the drop happens at the same time. It's not as traumatic as you think it is. You're not going to faint from it. You're not going to have a... I actually was at one of the conversions that I was part of with the person there. And said, there's nothing. It literally took all of 45 seconds, the whole process. Take the blood, do the bracha, done. I wasn't there when the moil was with him doing it, but I was up in the room. He didn't scream. He and his fiance and I were in the antechamber, so outside the examining room. It's happened in a sterile environment. Didn't have a bandaid on or anything of that stuff. It was, so just so we get that's out of the way. Okay. Those are the three things required: the knowledge, the immersion, and coming into the covenant. Those are important. Two of them don't require any preparation. One requires preparation. So we're doing the preparation for that part. And again, the mikveh does charge, I think, $100. Again, you can quote more, that's beyond what the class is. And you know, the baked in shouldn't charge for this. If they do, it can be a gift at your discretion. We can work out with the other two rabbis. I mean, obviously, I'm not. That's at your discretion. But it's not such a big. It really, when we go up there, the odds are the mikvah and the baked in happen on the same day. And I can tell you my timeline now. My timeline would try to get all the material covered that you guys are ready for the exam, so that you guys can all have an aliyah at Tzimchas Torah. For those that are able to have an aliyah, to have an aliyah at Tzimchas Torah, which is middle of October. That's my timeline. Could happen before that. That's my outside timeline. So with the goal that you know, if it's in this synagogue, that the men all get an aliyah. For Tzimchas Torah, which is sort of a nice way to celebrate coming to the Torah, but that's that kind of idea, and just a nice special Kiddush during Tzimchas Torah. That's my, to me, it adds some symbolic significance to our journey. So I don't know how that sounds with everybody. That's a good timeline for most people. Okay.
No, that's different. I might be just activated. So I'm not deploying.
Okay. But
I'm staying around here.
Yeah, so you're fine. So if you activate it, you're still good. So,
yeah, I don't know if like that specific day I'll be off.
No, the odds are, well, if you let them know in advance, and I know that our army chaplain can write it out for you, because that's part of what they're providing for religious support. Mm-hmm. Your chaplain, actually, whatever you need to be with, can actually write.
I'm not going to push the issue. I'm just saying I'll put it up for it if they say no.
Then I will be happy to have an 06 call your 05 and tell me chapter.
Some of them are 06.
I'll have a 2-star calling.
Okay, okay.
I have a lot of, I can have chaplain with a lot of calling. He works in 3-quarter. That's the head of chaplain with 3-quarter. He works for the 2-star.
Battle staff.
Yeah, don't worry. It's not a problem to get, it's providing religious support. It's a requirement of the army, religious freedom. So, but the odds are it'll be on a Sunday. We're trying to do it on a Sunday. So it's probably a more flexible day for everybody anyway. See, maybe the Rangers are playing or something. Maybe the whole the stars. By then it would be the stars. Right? So pretty much that is the process. Now, as far as expectations, because we are going to meet mostly on Sundays, and after the kashrut class ends, I want to move this class out to do it earlier than later. Okay. So to take the time of where the kashrut class was, so like a 10 or 10:30, so it will be coordinated with the Hebrew school for those that have kids. So it won't be separate from the Hebrew school. But until then, the days that the kashrut class is meeting, we'll have a class afterwards. Unless there's a better night for all. And I guess the Sundays is probably the most flexible for everybody. Does that sound like a Sunday's the most flexible for everybody? Okay, so if we move it to 10, and we'll try and do it every week that I'm here. And I say that because there are some days when I'm traveling. So, and we'll meet between an hour and a half. I'll try to keep it there. Expectations would be to come to all the classes. If you can't come to a class, let me know in advance. That's why we take an email list, set up a group email. But let me know in advance because I'm going to tell you what we're covering. You can cover it on your own. Okay? But the expectations are you're going to attend a certain number of classes. So, and I'm going to look at how many classes we need to cover the material and give you a percentage of what it is. But the idea is that you're going to be able to cover the materials with me or on your own. There may be some things that I may ask you to do as leading up to it. For example, one of the things that often is asked first is for people to write an essay on why they want to be Jewish. What interests them in becoming a Jew? So at some point I may ask that question. It's not quite there yet. Okay, I could ask that at first, but that's not really, you know, really what I want to ask right now. Today's about the overall class. The next time we will meet will be on Mother's Day, because I'm going to be away the next two weeks. Mother's Day is the 10th. So you can put that down, and we'll meet right after the kosher class. I would recommend that if you can come to the kosher class, it'll help you when we get to the section that deals with kosher kitchens, because it will help you. For those of you who came today, there was a lot of material there, but it really opened up to people. I saw the faces of people. Next time, we're going to do the cooking and the whole mixtures and all that, and talk about preparing foods for Shabbat, which that discussion will help teach us about the Sabbath. We'll learn about the 39 Malachot. One of the things that you need to know about Shabbat. So that's May 10th. So if you can't make it, just let me know, and we'll prepare the materials for you that you can do a little bit on your own. But try May 10th. This will be the next time that we meet for this class. You can manage kids to the Hebrew school and come to everything. Yeah, you're good for the Hebrew school as much as you want. I think you spoke to Irish a little bit about this. Yeah, they're welcome there, as long as there's Hebrew school out there. At some point in time, in the summertime, there obviously won't be Hebrew school. But we can work with that. There could be other ways that we can engage the kids. You and I, the three of us can talk offline. We have time to talk about that. Hebrew school goes until, I think, June. So at least in May will be good. And the summertime, you know, obviously people will be going on vacation or whatever. So again, if you miss a class, you know, the material will be important. Before we go forward, any questions? So let's before we go next, let's just go around, just introduce everybody that's here. Just some of you will know each other, but some of you don't. So Lydia, why don't we start with you?
Hi, my name is Lydia, and I'm originally from Germany, and I've been here since 2010. Yes.
Yeah. Larry, Mary Butler, my oldest, Rachel, Sarah, and Genevieve. And, we've been attending services here since July last year.
Yeah, and I would encourage you should go to this, start going to services to get familiar. You don't have to go all the time, just to get familiar with the services. It'll be part of the test of CSA.
I'm Jared Bruno, this is my wife Gracie. Okay. And we've been coming here for at least a couple of years.
I'm Jadis Howard, and I'm in the temple. Gracie said, come over here. That's not the only reason I've been
at
any rate, so about since, was it July?
Yeah. Almost as long as me.
Michael. Michael. And we've been here in like 2 years,
I guess. Yeah. I see. It's a good sign. Okay.
My name is Olga.
Olga. My name is Sean. It's my wife, Megan. We've been practicing for a little over a year now.
They've been regulars at this part of the... Just introduce them to Beth at the Seder. David already at the Seder.
Mm-hmm. Chris, been coming since around June, in the middle of summer.
Great Seder, so there's a lot of us. And you know, it's good that you get to see, also be part of the community and come to the service. And Yosef, Yosef's not taking the class, he's just here to.
I'm also, you can learn anything you need.
The truth is, there's the class isn't only open to those with computers. Not all of you are going to convert again. By your own choice, I mean, but you'll have the knowledge to do whatever you want with that knowledge. This is a class, and it's a structure. You know that the cantor had a class that had a lot of some topics here. This is going to be a structured class. There'll be a curriculum. You'll be following a specific goal in mind, so it won't be all over the place. And the purpose of that is that you have some structure, some substance. And there'll be things that I will cover, and there'll be things that I'll be on the test that I don't cover that I'll tell you need to cover on your own, because there's only so much you can do, yes.
And even though, just want to make sure, so the Beit Din and the Mikvah, that's like internationally recognized?
It'll be recognized because there'll be three rabbis, three Orthodox rabbis on it, yes. Yeah. And but it'll be on Beth El letterhead, with the notion that our names will be on it as well. But the other rabbis are going to think about it. Which brings me an interesting point, going down to the fees. Most of you have gotten an idea of the fees from Kevin. If not, we'll send you an idea. There's an individual rate, there's a family rate, and there is an expectation at some point to either make a gift. The synagogue charter does not allow for full membership until the actual conversion process. But there's an expectation that you will make a gift at some point in the synagogue for being able to provide the service. So just to let you know, so you should know that. You don't have to, but there's an expectation that at some point, they haven't set up a status as an affiliate member yet, that stats we talked about, that would be the right price range. But I think it's not an expensive congregation. It is probably the most affordable congregation in most of the places in the United States, it's one of the most affordable congregations. And I think the membership will tell them to go to the Hebrew school, so you know that already, so you guys have been told that already. It's not, I think for first family, it's like $300.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's not. As far as the fees themselves for this class, you guys already should know, but I'll send that out. Just make sure that you pay it. If you can't pay it in one shot, to pay it over, and make arrange the free payment that you paid off Kevin and I haven't decided on the structure, but there'll be a way to pay it in more than one shot. I think the class itself is $400, because we're meeting for several months, $400, for the individual, and I think there's a cap on that for families. Families are another cap, so I don't know if there are any more details on the cap. It's uncomfortable talking about the prices. It's really covering me, any of the expenses and the time, mostly me, to be quite honest. I give back a percentage to the congregation as well. And if that's why I want to work out with the Beit Din, I can use some of that towards the Beit Din, but not, we'll figure it out. But again, paying it out over time is fine. I know Kevin has no issues with it as long as you make the commitment to it. So it's probably next class will have an actual contract that you're taking the class, making the commitment to the class, as opposed to having something that most probably had a contract at some point, right? Mm-hmm. We're following a model that was used by the University of Judaism for the most part. That is a pretty standard. That's why I say we need to ask the question, we're using an internationally recognized test. So when people ask the question, you can show them the Tzedakah, you can show them the stuff, you'll see the rabbis. And that helps a lot with that, you know. And since it's three rabbis sitting on it, the Jewish agency of people making the global movement in Israel is completely recognizes it. Because it's three Orthodox rabbis, there shouldn't be any problem in any Orthodox synagogue. And I say shouldn't be any problem in any Orthodox synagogue, but each synagogue works almost independently of what. It's just that's not the, no. Put it this way, Bethel, be able to do anything you want to do. And actually, also, I know Rabbi Milner, for example, at Tiferet, you'll have no problems getting on the other side. We haven't talked about him being on the Beit Din, but I could see him also being involved.
Well, those Orthodox rabbis, who
they belong? Well, one of them is a rabbi in a conservative synagogue, and one of them is an independent synagogue in Dallas. I know them from Rabbi Fuller, who's in Waco.
There's not Orthodox.
They're Orthodox ordained rabbis.
Sorry?
Their ordination, like my ordination is Orthodox.
Uh-huh.
So their ordination is also Orthodox. So there's three Orthodox ordained rabbis. They're not working Orthodox figures, but they're Orthodox rabbis.
Uh-huh.
So one's working in a conservative synagogue, one's working in an independent synagogue. This is like an independent synagogue. Rabbi Fuller, who's a rabbi in Waco, if he were still here, he's leaving in June. He would be another Orthodox rabbi I can call upon, but he's not going to be here after June. But he's working at the Church of Synagogue. He's an Orthodox ordained rabbi. So that's what helped me get the context there. So it was they've been part of the Waco Beit Din. When they've done a Beit Din in Waco, that's how they've done it.
And you say that go to Mikra, which Mikra?
In Dallas. Yeah.
So those guys don't know, right?
I haven't even asked, but if we're going to go to Dallas anyway, for the Beit Din, the Beit Din is going to take place in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to do it all one day.
I think.
So dunk and learn, so to speak. It's not that they don't want to. Conversion through Chabad requires you to keep Shabbos. We're not asking that question. There's an expectation that you do your best to keep Shabbos. But if we tell you to keep Shabbos, some of you can't keep Shabbos and go to shul. So if Chabad has, I probably can ask Rabbi Lotov if he let us use the Beit Din based on who the rabbis are, and possibly, but it's just sometimes it's just easier to do everything in one shot because there's not two trips. You go up there, get done, have the Beit Din meet for everybody, go up there carpooling up there or something, and then come back. It's one day, and just get it all knocked out. I mean, the tests will be done in advance, so they'll ask a couple of questions. Because part of the meeting before the beginning, there's an oral. You do the written test, it's fine. I show them the written tests. But they're going to ask you some oral questions, one or two oral questions from the test that you should know. And they're going to be random. So it's about prepping for it. So the test that we go through, because you will have samples of it, will be your study guide, so to speak. But
like a pass fail, do they tell you right then? Like,
if you prepare properly, that's why the expectations. If you actually get prepared, they're not there. You've done all the work. They're not there to stump you. They're not going to ask you the one benign question that's a gray area by which to. I mean, I wouldn't do that. I didn't do that at Baytin. Baytin says you met the standards by the written test, and you should be able to answer, one or two basic, explain to me the Shacharit service. Now, you don't know it yet, but you will know. Some of you know it, but that could be a question you're asked. How many times a day do Jews pray, and what are those prayer services consisting of? Well, the services are, the Maariv, Shacharit, and Mincha Maariv, Shacharit, right? And the evening, morning, and afternoon, you'll know the Hebrew names for them. You're not required to know Hebrew for the test, but you should have a basic understanding of some basic, knowing when to pray is a pretty basic thing in Judaism. I can tell you that some of the things you're going to know, most Jews don't always know anymore, because you know what? If you're born into something, you take that for granted. But I'd rather have someone come in that knows what they're talking about than. Now, the same person I was having this conversation about, it was saying that, very often, there's a whole debate about conversion right now going on in the world, that some of the Orthodox communities are making it almost impossible to convert. Whereas there's this talk that those that come into the faith have added so much value by helping those of us who are already born into it want to be more Jewish, want to express ourselves more, because they're coming with this childlike exuberance of understanding. Now, one of the things you'll get from me is you'll get the tempered, not the machmir, not the all strict, the tempered notion of how to know that there's a gray area, that, Judaism is not black and white. In certain conversions, you're going to get only the black and white. Judaism isn't black and white. Judaism is all gray. And gray is sometimes easier to bring into your life than black and white. But what Judaism does provide is a sense of history, a sense of connection, a sense of belonging, a sense of things that might... There are other religions, but there's something... I mean, I love Judaism, so I'm not going to be someone that tells you anything different, but something that actually you feel a sense of connectivity that... if you were at the Seder, you got the sense at the Seder. Seder is a great place to see it. You see the historical connection, you see the religious connection, you see the family connection, you see the... That's what it's supposed to be about. And what you take from this class and bring it to your own homes, I hope you're able to do certain things. I hope you make the effort. And as I say, hope. I hope that you do these things. But I can't tell you, no, you got to take like a whip and say, you have no choice, you do it. So basically, I've gone through the basic process, I've gone through the expectations. Again, there'll be some work, some things to do on your own. I want to show you a sample of some of the tests. The book, again, that I highly recommend is, what did I say? I gave it to you. But I'll send it out in an email as well. This is my computer. I'm wearing my charger, so my computer purposely closed off. So, okay. So, and we're just about to wrap it up. Anyway, we're pretty much done. That's it.
Yes,
on. Okay. We're on HTML. Look at that. So there's the book. I'm talking about conversion to Judaism. It's $34.49 for the Kindle edition. The print book is, you can buy used for $7.55. So it's a really expensive book. Really worth, it's not new, but you know, Judaism to some degree hasn't changed that much. Okay, there's a website called Conversion Judaism, Should I Convert to Judaism? Okay, and it has a number of resources that you can go through in here as well. There is a sitemap. Go to the sitemap, you see all these different things, the process and everything's here. We'll use some of these things here. Okay. And if I go here. This is a sample test that was done by Zacharia Tzvi Goldman for Institute for Halakha Conversion. Okay. And these are some of the questions. See, if you see the categories here, the categories are Torah philosophy, Shabbat, blessings, Jewish calendar, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Hanukkah, Purim, Pesach, the Omer, which we're going through right now, today's the 15th day of the Omer, Shavuot, fast days, Yom HaTzma'ut, Yom HaShoah, how keeping kosher, Mezuzah, Shul, Beit Knesset, Shatness, and some of you know what Shatness is, some of you don't know what Shatness is, the difference between Yom Tov, Tzedakah, the idea of Taharat Mishpacha, Tefillin, the morning Seder, the order of the morning, the Torah study, honoring the rabbis and the elders, business ethics and stealing, and different laws of mourning. And a test written like this, okay, and this is a Torah philosophy, okay, why is, I would word it slightly different, because I think some of the wording in here, Yosef and I looked at it and said, not so much. So I wouldn't say why is homosexuality, this question of why is homosexuality and lesbianism wrong. I would not say, that's not a wording that I would use in today's context. This is an older test, this is a 2007 test, so I might word it a little bit differently. I wonder some of the halakhic issues with, and look at the conservative reform and orthodox perspectives on it.
So yeah. Things have changed that much in 7 years?
Wording's changed a lot.
Yeah.
The halakha hasn't changed,
yeah.
But the wording's changed. Okay? Wrong is a judgment. We want it to be more, and again, you know, I'm giving you perspectives that's not just Orthodox, even though it's Orthodox rabbi, but you should know the different denominations. How many malachas? You don't even know what a malacha is. Okay, but how many different types of work are forbidden on Shabbat? Right? So when a rabbi asks you that, how many things are forbidden on Shabbat? How many things are forbidden on Shabbat?
39.
Okay? When we do the cooking on Shabbat, okay, these are cooking on Shabbat, right? How many of those 39 relate to cooking? There's 11.
Yes,
11. And actually, in the next class, there's a kashrut class, we'll go over that. So when I say that things will help you learn about Shabbat, okay, I'm more concerned as a rabbi, okay, see, piece 7 of the melachas. I would ask the question, what are the 11 halachas that deal with cooking? Now, one of the things you know, that would be an easy one is you cannot make a paste on Shabbat.
Like a pesto.
Like a paste. Okay? So you're adding water to something to make it like a paste, like a like water. Okay? You can't make hummus because it's mashing it down and making it a paste. No. You can't make oatmeal. You can't eat oatmeal on Shabbat.
Even if it started before,
you can't
even have it.
How about instant coffee?
Wow.
Instant coffee, it's not a paste. Okay. But where the water comes from, how hot the water is, do you use a clean Rishon Sheni?
They did that with kind of coffee, some is paste even.
No, I'm not talking Turkish coffee makes a paste in the bottom. And even then, it's not really a paste. If you ever look at it, it's not really a paste. It just settles in the bottom. But there are things like that. It's a nuance, right? It's a nuance, but it helps you understand the different, because where did the 39 come from? Those are the different types of labor that are done in the Mishkan, in the desert, the building the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert. So when you're building the tabernacle in the desert, these 39 things apply. You can't build on Shabbat. That's how it relates to that. So it helps enhance the Shabbat when you go through these things. Jake, the idea of muksa. So here it says here, why is it wrong to drive on Shabbat? But that's a false statement, because it depends what movement you're coming from. So why is driving not allowed on Shabbat? Would be a better way of writing that question, for example.
One domain to the other, making fire,
Making fire is the main one.
Igniting.
Okay? Because the minute you start the car, you're lighting a new fire. And every time you're not allowed to put fuel in the fire, so every time you press in the accelerator,
you're breaking it every time.
So when you think about it, it makes sense. Doesn't mean it's practical, but it makes sense. Again, something that we're not going to say, you can't drive. Okay, so that's why we didn't like the wording on some of this stuff. Okay, that's an example of wording that you can write it much better and get the same answer. Why does conservative Judaism allow driving on Shabbat? Because they think that the importance of being in synagogue has a different kind of level of value. That sense of community is important. Okay, so they allow driving to and from shul. That's it. The worry, though, is that people will fall off and go outside of it. They look at the fire separately. Okay, why am I allowed? What under what circumstances can I break the Sabbath? Okay. Am I allowed to move something that is not allowed to be touched on the Sabbath?
No.
That's something that's muksa.
Well, that depends.
See, Judaism always ask. Here's the free chicken for the day. Free chicken for the day. It's an army terminology. We get something that's not part of the creed. Okay, free chicken. There's always an exception in Judaism. There's always an exception in Judaism. So that's why each case in Judaism, when we talk about things like abortion, does Judaism allow abortion?
Yes.
It depends.
It depends on the circumstances.
Okay? It's every case is individual, case-by-case basis. Yes, Sean?
So, hypothetically speaking, if we get this test and we wrote, it depends for every answer, we're technically not wrong.
You have to give the circumstances of why.
Okay.
You have to explain the it depends.
You mentioned the word essay.
You have to explain.
I can do that.
Yeah, because these are going to be your study questions, but the test that I'm going to give you is going to be derived from this. It's not going to be this test. Okay? I could make it multiple choice, which is even more complicated. You don't want multiple choice. No, you don't want my multiple choice.
I'll choose all.
Trust me, you don't want my multiple choice. Okay, here's a great question. Why is there anti-Semitism in the world?
It depends.
How do you understand the relationship between modern science and the Torah?
It depends.
Doesn't work on every question.
No.
Here are the blessings that we say over these. So if I give you a multiple choice, what blessings do you say over mangoes?
What?
Bananas, peanuts.
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that, but when you're asked for it stung, okay? So what do you say for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
I eat
But it depends, right? If you're saying amotzi, what are you saying? That the bread is, right?
The bread is, I'm sorry.
So how many people is this over their head? Okay. So when we're eating foods, we're supposed to say a blessing before we eat anything.
Right.
Now, eating a sandwich, if it's bread that's not, that's just bread, something we would wash our hands for, you say hamotzi. If it's bread, like a cinnamon bread, or a bagel that has made with juice, right, what blessing do you say then? What blessing do you say for a cracker, or for a cookie?
What's in the cookie?
Okay, borei mineh. So if the bread is a flavored bread or is a bagel that has juice, because a lot of bagels are made with some juice in it, you have borei mineh mizonot. Now, if it has neither of the categories for bread, or for a special kind of thing, you can say shakol. Which is the prayer you say over everything.
They need to have the side notes for all the little extras.
Okay, but for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, what would be the natural assumption? That there's bread in it. So we say hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. And you need to wash before you eat.
Can it be a good example of a question that we won't get?
That would be a good example of a question that would not be asked by the Beit Din.
Exactly.
But it could be asked on the question by the exam.
What's the percentage of questions?
Asking blessings about foods, asking blessings about foods would be a great, easy question to ask you.
Yeah.
Because it's really only three or four, because it depends if it's new fruit, you can say Shekhayanu, but for the most part, there's really only three blessings you need. About four if you count Barei Pri Gefen. Right? Okay, so blessings are the fruit of the vine, blessings over everything that God creates, Shekhon Yedim Paro, everything is made of his thanks to him. Barei Minim Mizonot, that's made through various mixtures, okay, and then it's motzi lechem, the grain from the ground. So you're talking about a total of five or six prayers. So you can categorize as five or six. If you know those five or six prayers, you're good to go. The question that confuses people is what bracha do you say after you eat them? Is it the full birkat hamazon, full grace after the blessings? Okay, or is it just the minei sheva, just because you've eaten something that, so if you've actually washed for the meal, there's a meal, you say the birkat hamazon, the full grace after the meals. If it's not, there's something called the seven facets of blessing. You just say for grains and grain. And if you look at the Seder, and you weren't at the Seder this year, but if you look at the Seder, at the Seder, actually, because we have a great grape juice after we eat the afikoman, we actually say the seven facets of blessings if you do the Seder from the Veda. Now, I'm confusing you now because this is something that we haven't studied. I'm saying terminology that you may not know and maybe over your head, but you will know this stuff because this stuff is the basic primer. Okay? And if you don't know it in Hebrew, you'll know it at least in English. Okay? You know, one of the favorite blessings, we had a discussion in Fort Hood yesterday morning, Friday night, a discussion was brought up on the blessing you say after going to the bathroom. One of the soldiers goes, hey, this is a great opportunity to teach them the pee-pee blessing. Okay. So there's actually a blessing you say, okay, after. And one of the blessing, I go. Okay. And if you think about the blessing, it's a very
first page. Yeah.
Okay, on page four. Right? Blessed are you, O Lord, our God, King of the Universe, who formed man in wisdom and created in him many orifices and cavities. It is revealed and known before thy throne of your glory that were one of them to be ruptured or blocked, it would be impossible to survive and stand before you. Blessed are you, O Lord, healer of all flesh, who does wondrous deeds. So it's affirming God's wondrous nature, allowing us to serve him by allowing all of our bodily functions, all the holes in our bodies, to not be closed up. And think about that. If your mouth was closed, or your nose was closed,
Skin.
Okay. That and we say that after every time you go to the bathroom to allow that, you know, being able to go to the bathroom helps you praise him.
But if you can't go to the bathroom, you will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if your tuchus was closed up. Now we're not talking about the binding of matzah.
Yeah. The binding of
the binding of matzah. There's the binding of Isaac and there's the binding of matzah.
Yeah.
We just finished the binding of matzah.
That's nothing.
So we're not talking about the binding of matzah. But we're going to have fun in this class too. I like to have a good time. This is kind of a subject that I encourage questions. So I will have a formal university-like syllabus that will follow. You have the textbooks. The other ones are, again, to be a Jew and to pray as a Jew. I'll divide probably the class up into two halves. Half the class will be dedicated to doing some kind of halacha observance, and half the class will be Jewish history. Because the two things go simultaneously. So you have to understand the origins from a historical perspective, which includes the origins of the Torah, but also understand it from a practical perspective. you want to make that sense of connection. So probably 45 minutes of each, an hour and a half class. That's my guess. Give you guys a break in the middle. But again, Army teach the standard, not the time.
Would it be on a Sunday?
It would be on Sunday. Okay. And we can start right after the pastor class for the break. Okay. So I encourage you, if you're going to bring a lunch, you can eat it during the class if you want. So that next time, if you're bringing food into this building, I don't know the policy, but I believe that as long as it doesn't go in the kitchen, if it's near you, it's fine. Right. I mean, we won't always be in this sanctuary. We're gonna, because of the size of the class, I think we might go into the other room just because it's a little easier. But obviously, if it's during Sunday school time, we'll probably be here. But that's pretty much the gist. Are there any questions? It's a lot more organized than some of you are used to. It's a lot more organized than my Kashrut class. Even my Kashrut class is very organized. It's more like a death and dying class in a lot of ways. I'll have some PowerPoints that will all be made available to you that I'll create. They'll have, again, the syllabus, things we go through. If there might be one or two field trips. We might want to do a cemetery, and things you want to do a cemetery, so I'd talk with the morning and maybe at the funeral home and talk with the Tara or have someone from the Chevra come in. No, I can do that thing, but just to have you be part of the Chevra Kedisha, the burial society, understand what those rules are so you can deal with it. We'll discuss things as you move forward. You know, how do I commemorate or memorialize my non-Jewish parents? Do I sit Shiva for them? Do I not sit Shiva for them? Do I do a Yahrzeit for them? And the answer is yes to all of that. Okay. You're able to do all that same things because it's for reverence to those that help bring you into this world and those that treat you. If you can do it for a teacher or for a rabbi, a sage, you can do it for your parents regardless of the origin as far as memory goes. It's about, remember, there's a personal connection as well as a communal connection. Judaism doesn't provide opportunities for you to connect on so many different levels. I'll encourage my other classes just because I'll help enhance it. Yesterday's text class was a lot of fun. It was really good from a esoteric perspective. I'm going to Hilchot Rambam, Maimonides, Articles of Faith. I mean, some of you were there, so I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun. And any other opportunities where you can learn stuff. And just again, we'll send an email reminding everybody for the next class, and I'll go over and record it with Kevin. So the expectations is that we'll meet on a regular basis, either every week or as often as I can. But enough to make me think we're gonna, after Shavuot, I'm pretty much here. I'm not expecting to go anywhere between then and the Chagim. I mean, the odds are against it. I mean, there's a shot here that's a lot. I know that I will be in shul here every second and fourth Shabbat. That's going to be my goal. So I encourage you guys to come to Shabbat services. Just to get to know that service. For those of you who are able to come, it's fine. I'll be at Fort Hood every third week. That's my goal, is to do Friday, Saturday morning. If I do the Saturday morning, at Fort Hood. So I mean, wherever you go to services, and you know, just do the go to Fort Hood or come here, whatever works for y'all. It helps when we get to the prayer. It makes us go faster if you've actually been to services because you understand it, and then we can go. That can be one of the things we spend less time on. Okay. And also, if you attended my class way back when, talking about the service, you should have some of that stuff already. So, I will give you all my email. In the email I sent out, you'll have my email to send me, it's my personal email, to send me questions that you have. If you have any questions during this process, if you're concerned, you're worried, you're scared, anything, can't make something, you're overwhelmed, that's for your benefit. Okay? So I'm not going to give it to you now. I'm going to email it to you. It's easier to have it once you have it there. And I'll email me, so you won't see everybody else's email. Just see your own. I have no objections that when we get closer to actually writing some kind of test, you're just working the study guide together and work that stuff out and all that. So that's fine by me. It helps you guys work together. That's part of the sense of community. You guys are going through this experience together. So it should be wonderful. I mean, having everybody go to the mikveh together, it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for us to be part of. So I'm glad that you guys have chosen to do it. Are there any other questions? Let's go enjoy this beautiful day. A reminder again, at 3:40, the Sisterhood today is going to see Women in Gold. I don't know what theater they're going to. Claudia's going?
Yeah.
Right. Want to ask her?
It's our burden.
What? Where is it? Our burden?
Yarber?
Okay. For those of you who don't know what the Women in Gold is, it's a movie about recapturing Holocaust art. So Helen Mirren is in it. And it's gotten really, really good reviews. That's all I know about it.
But what was the name of the movie that you showed us about the people who went and helped? Was it the first movie?
The Gray Zone. That one? No.
The people who went and helped Israel.
Oh, Jerusalem?
Oh, Jerusalem. Yeah. Because the one they're having at the Jada is different.
It's completely different. That was about the beginning of the Air Force. And El Jerusalem is based on a book, which is a fictional book. Even though all the characters are real, it was fiction. That's fictional history. Not history is told with fiction. So like, you know, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Slayer? There's a lot of history in Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Slayer. I didn't know the South had vampires. It's a good book. It's actually a much better book than it was a movie.
I don't think Adam was asleep after the vampire
book. No, I have to tell you, because it was happening in the Civil War. It was kind of funny. Good. So if there's no questions, you guys can go ahead and enjoy this day. Okay. The kids are playing outside?
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. So no questions? No questions?
Well, Megan talked to you about a lot of training that I might have to do.
Yeah, we're gonna work out a lot of the schedule for you.
Okay.
He won't have a problem.
Okay.
Megan will be.
Hopefully I'll find out this week. I start tomorrow. So I'll have orientation tomorrow, Tuesday.
And then you're training everywhere.
I'm sure. It's supposed to be in Baltimore. They said initially it was 6 weeks, but then I got an email from HR saying it was 8 weeks.
As long as you have materials,
I should know by bye.
She can tape. All the classes are going to be taped audio.
Okay.
If she wanted to tape some of them.
I figured, if you said you're going to make PowerPoints available.
Yeah, you guys are. It'll be fine.
I'm not worried about it at all.
And if you have questions, how about you know? Just email me.
Okay.
But I remember that from before. For some reason, maybe I just didn't remember what was happening with training, but there was some issues with people going somewhere.
Yeah, just.
Training for what?
I got hired by the VA. So I'll be.
Are you surprised about that?
Yes, actually, I was quite surprised because I went to
George works there, so.
Well, it'll be the one in Waco. He works in Tampa.
Yeah. So that means you guys, I think.